atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here all week long. Brian Kilmeade Show, moving your direction. Steph Knight, Axios political reporter, will be with us. A lot to cover today. We're going to get our first economic speech from the vice president of the United States about what she'd do if she was president. I've got the vice president who's going to be speaking. He's going to spend most of his time, the vice presidential nominee and J.D. Vance, he's going to spend most of his time in the Midwest. He's going to be in Milwaukee today. I think he's been really strong. And, of course, yesterday, President Trump had a press conference, answered tons of questions, and talked inflation. And also they're adding Corey Lewandowski back into the fray. Corey's a very bright guy, combative. He has always let Trump be Trump. But I think right now you need Trump to be a little bit more subtle than that. What do you think? 1-866-408-7669. Let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We're constantly looking at the situation and making sure that, you know, that we've got what we need in place should there be an attack. We don't have a lot of certainty here. It's not exactly clear whether there'll be one.
You're talking about an Iranian attack. Gaza talks start as Hamas continues to lose men, military muscle, and still alive. Well, what Israel needs and now Iran's next move. We'll examine it all coming your way.
Number two.
If you had the election tomorrow, I think Harris would be a slight favorite. She's been ahead in most recent polling in the blue wall states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. We have three more months to go. There will be more surprises, and the polls have been wrong before. In both of the last two general elections, they underestimated Trump.
Almost everyone agrees that they underestimated Trump. Nate Silver, 538, new book out. Maybe we'll try to get him here. New polls are in. It looks like Harris higher than Biden, but honeymoon just might be coming to a close, especially if you look at the Fox News poll, which is usually not that kind to Trump. Next up, the DNC.
Number one.
When I am president, it will be a day one priority to fight to bring down prices. I will take on big corporations that engage in illegal price gouging.
Yeah, name two, because I can't name any. 25 days after announcing she's the nominee, zero interviews, zero presser, or plans to do them until today. Kamala outlines her economic vision. She won't take questions after. All I see is Bidenomics as Trump gets ready to pounce and prices soar and inflation remains. And President went over and said, hey, I know you met me in Mar-a-Lago. I got this other place in Bedminster in New Jersey. Let's do a presser there. And he does. They also announced that Trump can go back to outdoor rallies. They're going to surround him with ballistic glass. And also, it's interesting, they're starting to really bulk up his security. I'll try to put this online, but someone took a picture last night in Newark, New Jersey, and it looks like an army is protecting President Trump, which is great. But know where they're taking him from? President Biden, because he's not traveling much. I don't know. It looks like they are down in terms of Secret Service force. I used to thought that was a job that they want to have, but evidently it's so grueling, it's tough for people to keep. And, of course, you make one mistake and you have lost, and that's all people are going to think about. I'm stunned. I should not be surprised every time a Democrat decides if they want to win over the American people, they should put down corporations and rich people. But now they're talking about price gouging. She thinks she knows why inflation's so high. It's not the Inflation Reduction Act, which they later told us was not didn't reduce inflation, never was intended to be, and they laughed about it. It's not the infrastructure deal. It's not the new Green Deal. It's not the rescue package. It is because of price gouging, which is crazy. Because if you look at price gouging when it comes to food, for example, the average profit margin on food stores, 1.6%. The average profit margin on all other industries, 8.6% in America. So you're gouging? Is that why Stop and Shop closed all those outlets? Because they were making so much money? So we should vilify store managers now and be upset that there's your spaghetti's more expensive because you just know they're just looking to make more profit from you? Or is it gas is more expensive, transportation's more expensive, the push for electric cars are more expensive, or the regulations make it more expensive? Is that part of it? Yes, because when you're talking about a few dollars here and a few dollars there, I think it matters a lot. I mean, here's what they're going to put in the economic plan for Harris. She's going to say she's going to cut taxes for the middle class, okay? Families, middle-class families with kids, a new $6,000 child tax credit for families, cut taxes on frontline workers. How do you do that? Cut taxes to help Americans Affordable Care Act. Again, subsidizing a failed Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Also, this is what she wants to do to lower grocery costs. First ever federal ban on price gouging. Food and groceries. Good luck with that. I want you to go in right now with all your cops, all those COVID cops. I don't know what they're doing now. Maybe Cuomo's got some left over. Start raiding. Go raid supermarkets. Set clear rules of the road to make clear that big corporations can't unfairly exploit costs to consumers. Yes, exactly. Because corporations need rules to decide if they should exploit consumers or not. Like they don't exist for consumers and they're not actually being staffed by consumers. All it is rich people like Elon Musk alone in a big tower by himself taxing working class people with hard hats on. So here's a little of what Kamala Harris can do. Yesterday, she spoke with Joe Biden. And Joe Biden insists that Bidenomics is fantastic, and that's what she's running on. But she hasn't looked at the economic plan, because evidently she's going to work on inflation on day one. She's not working on it now. Cut 15.
I could speak all afternoon about the person that I am standing on this stage with. Our extraordinary President Joe Biden. And he's going to speak in a minute. There's a lot of love in this room for our president. And I think it's for many, many reasons, including few leaders in our nation have done more on so many issues, including to expand access to affordable health care like than Joe Biden.
Okay. I can tell you exactly what they've done. And it doesn't make our country safer. They're looking to get price controls and they're looking to maximize what you can charge for a head of lettuce, what you can charge, for celery, what you can charge for ice cream. They tried this in the 1970s. Richard Nixon did because they were getting frustrated with inflation and it boomeranged. They try it all the time in socialistic countries like Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba. All it does is create food shortages and people don't want to work anymore because you put a ceiling on what you can do. That's not why we're in a free market economy. So let's think about this. They have we're in the middle of a COVID pandemic. We're coming out of it. We spend billions of dollars to try to get people to go home, to deconflict. We're getting them back to work. And they realize, despite all the money that's been spent, never let a crisis go to waste. Rahm Emanuel said it. Joe Biden did it to the 10th power. Now, when the economy collapsed in 2008, Barack Obama went and got got financing, $350 billion, put it into the system. Do you know what Joe Biden did? Got $1.9 trillion and flooded the system. And then inflation went up to 9%. Larry Summers says that's what did it, the rescue package. Then he comes in with another package, then the new Green Deal. He put $122 billion to get schools open. They never opened. $30 billion for mass transit. $300 billion towards all overall COVID. And what we had is huge inflation. And she's not admitting it. Now she's going to tackle it. So this is what President Trump has got to run on. Run on what they did and trying to straighten it out. Cut three.
People don't know who she is. As far as the personal attacks, I'm very angry at her that she'd weaponized the justice system against me and other people. Very angry at her. I think I'm entitled to personal attacks. I don't have a lot of respect for her. I don't have a lot of respect for her intelligence.
Well, that is not what he should be focusing on. Number one, I don't know what she had to do to weaponize it. I'm sure she was all over. She knows all the AGs. But it doesn't matter. Because for President Trump, if he wants to stay out of jail and not have Jack Smith go after him without money coming in for America First, legal or anything else, he's got to win. And the way to win is to go after how she's changed. How the woman that said no fracking, no offshore drilling, don't decriminalize border crossings, gets rid of private health care. Let's be the most radical, most liberal, most socialistic senator in Washington, even better than Bernie Sanders. That's in 2019. Bring that up. So when Trump got to Q&A and they say, why the personal attacks? That was his answer. But this is what his answer should be. Cut one.
You mentioned this in your remarks. Vice President Kamala Harris wants to put a ban on price gouging. Do you think that the federal government should be responsible for determining food prices?
Well, not only responsible, they probably can't do it legally. And that will drive up prices.
Right. Cut four.
She's changed on everything. But I said, why are you changing? I actually was asking somebody that knows her, why is she changing? She had these policies and ideas for years and years and years and very solid on. But she's got a lot to change. Almost everything she's ever said, she's got to change.
Right. So why is she changing? And why is she changing to what the Trump policies are? And then what does Trump do to rein her in? Play nonstop her making comments about everything I mentioned before about Bidenomics being great, about the being. Do you know what she said they dug up yesterday? What she said about immigration. Say Donald Trump wants to build his vanity project and build a wall at the border and says terrorists are coming in. And that couldn't be further from the truth. There were 99 on the FBI terror watch list. And guess what? They got in and they're allowed to stay. They were found out to be on the list and they were told to go forward. Do you know what happened yesterday? In New York, in Buffalo, New York, breaching our border. And this is pretty incredible. I think when you, you know, if you understand what's happening with illegal immigrants in New York and 67,000 here illegally, you see that he is they found this guy who has been accused and convicted on 23 murders from Colombia. He got into Buffalo and they finally caught up to him when he crossed the northern border. And they also found the New York City migrant accused of raping this woman on Coney Island on Sunday night at knife point and beat up her boy. The other guy beat up her boyfriend with a lead pipe. This is Gianfranco Navarro. This guy, as I was mentioned before, is head of a gang. Gianfranco Torres Navarro, the leader of the Lost Killers. By the way, if you're the leader of the Lost Killers, I'm pretty sure you should be eliminated right then from the lottery of coming into our country. But I digress. And is wanted for 23 killings in Peru. He was arrested in Endicott, New York, 145 miles northwest of New York City, by ICE, who, by the way, in New York, can't cooperate, nor can local police cooperate with them. So this is what's happening at our border. She's on the record saying this. So if I'm President Trump, I don't care what she did on lawfare. I talk about that with my friends and my family. When I up there, I do exactly what he did at his press conference yesterday. Here's Maxwell House coffee. This would have cost when I was president. This would have cost now. Now, here's cereal. This would have cost when I was president. This would have cost now. I mean, you're seeing everybody who goes shopping. Maybe they think, well, it's just me. You know, things are tight. I didn't get the raise I wanted, but things are more expensive. Maybe it's where I shop. I think people need to know it's not just you. It is everywhere, depending on the state. When we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. I'll give you another example of what they're doing and going to announce today. They're basically trying to buy off people. If you have health care costs, they're looking to forgive health care costs. Student loans, they're already in the process of challenging the Supreme Court and doing it in defiance of the Supreme Court. They're also looking to give first-time home buyers money for a down payment. Now, keep in mind, it's not Kamala Harris's savings account. It's all of ours. You're literally buying votes. Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
She's bringing out people who are not interested in voting for either Trump or Biden. So the entire electoral pool has changed. And if it continues in this direction, you have to start to consider Democrats winning the Senate and Democrats winning the House. The actual people who are participating, she's got intensity now. She's got an intensity advantage. She's got a demographic advantage. And I haven't seen anything like this happen in 30 days in my lifetime.
Well, no, why? One thing, Frank Luntz, great respect for him. But one of the reasons, Frank, is she did not have to get any primary. She didn't go through the primary. She didn't have Democrats beating up on her. She didn't have Democrats saying, what did you say in 2019 about fracking? What did you say in 2019 about immigration? What do you mean that you're now you're no longer for the new Green Deal? What do you mean you weren't going to create a filibuster to force down the new Green Deal down our throats? Now, there was no one challenging on our record. In fact, all you have is everybody united around him because he's not Joe Biden. So can you imagine if Donald Trump didn't have Governor DeSantis, Governor Haley, not Vivek didn't really take much aim at him, Governor Burgum didn't take much aim, who really went at Donald Trump hard. Can you imagine that? Along with Democrats going at Donald Trump hard and the lawfare. You might say, well, Donald Trump walks on water. Everyone seems to love him. No one challenged him. Nobody in the media asked him a question because he won't give any interviews. He won't do any press conferences. You could say you've never seen anything like it. He would have great ratings. But all the press is against him. He had a brutal primary process. He won all of it. And now he's on lawfare. They've been hauling him into court. And you say, well, she really seems to be walking on water. Well, guess who's propping her up on water? A guy below holding her feet. So Fox News did a poll, not quite as encouraging for her. Who do you like on the economy if you're voting for president? They also ask on immigration and border security. So in terms of who you like, 63% approve of Donald Trump when it comes to immigration. Fox News did a poll on how much do you blame the Biden-Harris administration, lack of enforcement for the situation at the southern border. 71% say a great deal, Biden-Harris. Fox News poll asked voters to describe the situation at the U.S. southern border. 44% said emergency. 43% said major problem. This is a guy that said we had no problem for 3 years. Now for 6 months, he says we had a problem because it got too big. And now she's saying she's going to enforce the border like she did as DA and AG. So who do you trust when it comes to border security? Trump by 19. Immigration, Trump by 14. Foreign policy, Trump by 7. Economy, Trump by 6, which is small compared to what it was. Crime, Trump by 5. Guns, Trump by 3. Supreme Court, Harris by 3. Uniting the country, Harris by 5. Healthcare, Harris by 10. Abortion, Harris by 15. Climate change by 18. Now, you can keep your climate change. Abortion, they're going to run on, but I wonder if that's getting to be, well, that's more of a state thing, because if it's on the ballot in the state, it changes things. The views of President Biden dropping out, 80% in support. And this, President Biden's job performance at 41%. How involved is President Biden making important decisions these days? Only 39% thinks he does. Did Harris know about Biden's decline over the last couple of years? 73%. From this poll, Trump could get his whole strategy for winning. And what's going to happen is she's going to give an interview. Speech will be fine. The DNC will give her a push. And then she's going to give an interview, and they're going to have the debates, and she's going to have to qualify and rationalize and sell to the American people why she doesn't believe anything she said and anything she did for 3.5 years and anything she said in 2019 to get that job and failed and anything she most things that she did as DA. And it's up to Trump. It's up to Trump and J.D. Vance to flesh it out. They do that. They got the facts and their track record on their side. It's going to help. It's not, this is what I would do. This is what I did. And this is what I will do. She's got to say, I'm not going to do what I did. I'm going to do these different things now. I'm pretty sure it's easier to sell the Trump plan. What do you think? Brian Kilmeade Show.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If you have the election tomorrow, which would be a strange thing to do, by the way, I think Harris would be a slight favorite. She's been ahead in most recent polling in the blue wall states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, all polling in the margin of error range. Look, this Fox News poll is pretty good for Trump. That'll help him a little bit when we update our model tomorrow. But you'd rather be Harris today. People should remember, though, two things. One, we have 3 more months to go. There will be more surprises. And two, the polls have been wrong before. In both of the last 2 general elections, they underestimated Trump.
That's what makes this exciting. Steph Kite, Axios reporter, joins us now, who's doing a lot of great work on this campaign and talks this today about how spending's booming and neither one of these campaigns is hurting for cash. Steph, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So one thing is pretty clear. It's been frustrating for Republicans because she does not give interviews, press conferences, and through intermediaries has reversing herself of everything she stood for and almost everything the Biden administration has done. Makes it a tough target, Steph.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly there's reasons the campaign has chosen to do this way. They clearly want to keep the enthusiasm going, and there seems to be a reluctance from the Harris campaign to really get her out there to answer for some of these policy shifts. It's been pretty remarkable that, you know, we have and we've all seen and heard the video clips of Harris on the record from just a few years ago in 2019 saying that she supports ideas like fracking bans and mandatory buyback programs for assault weapons and decriminalizing border crossings. And now when, you know, reporters have reached out to the Harris campaign, we get background statements from, you know, officials, from staffers who say that she no longer holds those positions. Pretty significant shifts in her policy. And, you know, there is pressure building for her to explain herself, to confirm that her thinking has changed, and to answer to accusations of her flip-flopping or, you know, accusations that she has embraced more progressive policies in the past. And, you know, I think even just in my conversations with other reporters, there's certainly growing frustration and a need to hear from her herself.
But they were remarkably patient with Joe Biden, who almost did nothing compared to other presidents. We've never seen somebody so inactive and so dismissive of the press. But which is kind of interesting is that Michael Tyler, who was representing Joe Biden 10 seconds ago, is now the Harris-Waltz communications director. This is what he got from Jim Acosta. I think he was surprised. Cut 27.
Why hasn't she had a press conference? She's the vice president. She can handle the questions. Why not do it?
We absolutely are going to do it. You hear her take questions as she's out on the stump. And she's, as she said last week, we're going to be having a sit-down interview here before the end of the month. What she's going to be focused on and what this campaign is going to be focused on is communicating directly with the voters that are actually going to decide the pathway to 270 electoral votes. That's why she
can commit to a press conference this week.
This past week. That's why we're doing a bus tour in Pennsylvania as we head into Chicago.
Michael, but one interview by the end of the month.
This month and throughout the rest of the campaign.
I don't want to, you know, belabor this, but one interview before the end of the month. I mean, that's not a lot. I mean, can you commit to a press conference before the end of the month?
We will commit to directly engage with the voters that are actually going to decide this election. And that is going to be complete with rallies, with sit-down interviews, with press conferences, with all the digital assets that we have at our disposal.
We'll see when, and the longer the better, because you know you can't be pinned down to being way left. You could say you're moderate through intermediaries. Steph, have you ever seen anything like it? I mean, when it comes to decriminalizing border crossings, she was for that. When it comes to get rid of private health care, she was for that. Mm-hmm. You know what her track record was as the most liberal senator in 2019? She wasn't running from that. She ran on that. And for the last 3.5 years, she's been all in with Joe Biden. I haven't heard anything except for maybe disenchantment from her staff as they resigned. So there is a lot of legitimate questions and only 80 days to go through it.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to ask, why would a campaign not want to have their candidate talk about her policy stances with the press who will know what to ask, who will be able to ask in-depth questions? She's not fielding questions from people at her rallies. She's, you know, just presenting her ideas from her point of view. And so I think this does reveal a bit of a reluctance and a hesitance to really dig into things, and maybe a nervousness that all of this excitement, enthusiasm, and shifting in the polls that we've seen over the past few weeks may be a little bit surface level once we get into it. And now look, the other side of this is that, you know, elections are sometimes won on vibes. We've done a lot of discussion about kind of the mood of both campaigns right now. And so there is something to just the mood that Harris and Walz have in contrast to Trump that maybe is winning over voters. And maybe there aren't so many voters who care deeply about policy. But I do think it's notable that they seem very reluctant to engage with the press or even have press conferences where, you know, there are lots of ways to set up what would be an easy interview if they wanted to. They could find, you know, press they feel like are more comfortable with the vice president. It would not bring particularly hard-hitting questions. But the fact that we've not even really seen that from them, I think, is notable. And it does track with how they've handled the press under the Biden administration as a whole. He has done fewer press conferences and media interviews than any other president going back to Reagan. You know, when you look at the data, it does show that there is a wariness of engaging with the media, and it is concerning.
Right. And people say, well, that's the media. That's inside the Beltway stuff. Not really. I mean, you just don't know. You can't vote for someone if you have no idea what they stand for. And you have a vice president who, you remember, Jamie Raskin and Nancy Pelosi getting on television basically saying Joe Biden should think about somebody else. Remember, Nancy Pelosi, but Jamie Raskin said, well, when Nancy Pelosi was asked, what do you think of Kamala Harris? She basically said, well, Joe Biden likes her. So now all of a sudden she's the nominee and everyone says she's perfect. And I just think it has nothing to do with the Beltway. It has everything to do with just finding out what she stands for. So today she's going to introduce, among the things, price controls, and she's going to vilify food stores, which is crazy because there's not one stat that I have seen that shows that they're price gouging. But she thinks that that's the problem as she tries to embrace but yet distance herself from Bidenomics.
Yeah, I mean, we are certainly watching her announcement today closely on economic issues. And she's also planning to, you know, introduce the idea of tax cuts for middle-class Americans. We really are seeing this focus, even in her economic policy, on, you know, middle-class working Americans. She's trying very hard to make that pitch. But it's going to come with blowback, and this really will be the first, one of the first policy focus announcements we hear from her, and it's going to be their first test of how the media reacts to it, how people are reacting to it, and how progressive she, you know, is going to be as the candidate, you know, whether she tries to distance herself from past positions on this as well.
Yeah, so give me an idea of grocery prices in January 2021 with $264, and June 2024 the $313. Profit margin on grocery stores, 1.6%. All other industries, 8.5%. But she's going to target grocery stores. The weekly grocery store cost for a family went from $250 to $264. And even though inflation is going up slower, it's still going up and never fundamentally came down. Do you think Tim Walz has been thoroughly vetted?
I mean, you know, I'm sure they have had vetting. They had, but it was a very short period of time. You know, this all happened very quickly.
I mean, by the press.
But I mean, there's been plenty of coverage of, you know, some of his issues, some of the murkiness around how he's talked about his time in the military that has come out in the press and been covered quite extensively. There has been coverage of the way he handled, you know, the riots in Minnesota. That is been a key vulnerability that we've seen. You know, I think this has happened quickly. We are all very quickly trying to adapt to this new ticket and build out our coverage from there. You know, I'm sure there will be more to come between now and November. It's kind of this strange situation where we are in the middle to end of an election year with a brand new campaign, essentially. And so, you know, learning who they are as a campaign, trying to figure out where they stand on policies, whether they've shifted in the past, who this vice presidential pick really is going to have to be a much quicker, fast-paced job.
What are your reporting on the Trump campaign? I know they just had Corey Lewandowski. They knew about Kamala Harris. In my view, what got them by surprise is the momentum she had. They looked at her as less formidable than Joe Biden, and we're still trying to figure out in this country, like, what happened that she has this type of support now. But do you think that Trump will do more personnel changes? Do you think that they're beginning to get their game plan together?
I mean, there is certainly a lot of rumbling about there being significant changes within the Trump campaign. I think they are still figuring it out. I think, you know, one thing we all know about Trump world, it's very hard to predict what he's going to do. And it ultimately goes to the top. And Donald Trump is the one making this, you know, calling the shots. And if he feels like the momentum behind Harris begins to shift, you know, in his favor, maybe things stay as they are. But it's clear, looking at kind of the actions that Trump has taken over the past few weeks, he feels like he needs to take back the attention, everything from his own press conferences he's been willing to do, talking to the press, his conversation with Elon Musk. The fact that Trump is putting himself out there and taking the questions is a sign that he feels like the attention Harris is getting is not helpful for him, and that his campaign needs to take a shift in strategy. Because up until this point, Trump was not quite as aggressive in getting out in front of people and campaigning the way he has now. We've seen a marked shift since Kamala Harris became the Democratic nominee, and there is certainly concern. When I talk with Republicans, you know, a few weeks ago, they thought, oh, Harris is very unpopular. You look at the polling, she's even more unpopular than Biden. And they are a little bit surprised by the momentum she's given and the way that it seems like the excitement around her campaign is trickling down to Senate and House races as well.
So Axios writes, you right, Republicans in the Trump campaign have dramatically increased their ad spending in recent weeks, closing in on the advantage Democrats have had. And the Trump campaign is upping it, but it's really going to kick in after Labor Day when other people kick in. But early voting starts soon after that. Then you have a debate. But that's one of the keys is like what the Republicans have is a lot of video on her on many different positions. They have her running, talking about every major issue. So you can run those ads until she says different. That might be the strategy to get her to come out and redefine herself rather than, Steph, you're getting your sources, I imagine, from anonymous sources, people within the campaign that don't want their name in there to say she's changed her mind on this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the strategy. You know, when Nikki Haley spoke to Fox earlier this week, I watched that interview, and I think it was notable that that was the strategy she encouraged the Trump campaign to take, that there are video clips, the ads make themselves. Why would you waste time urging Trump or urging Harris to do a press conference when you have her on video? You can run the ads now. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of ad money being spent already. I'm sure those ads are being made as we speak. But it'll, you know, it will be interesting whether that forces, if Republicans do go that route, if that does ultimately force Harris to kind of answer for herself where she stands on some of these issues.
Should be interesting down this week, because the subplot is the protests. Some are complaining, the anti-Israeli protesters, that they're not getting the permits that they wanted. Pro-Israel protesters, they're not getting the permits they wanted. Do you have a sense of how this is going to go in Chicago?
I mean, there's been growing concerns and concern for a long time that the DNC would be, you know, overwhelmed by protesters, especially, anti-Israel protesters who have been particularly loud on the Democratic side and particularly critical of Biden's handling of the war in Gaza. We're expecting that to still be the case, but whether, you know, permits are withheld and they try to tamp down those efforts, we'll just have to see how that plays out. But I think there's no question we will continue to see kind of that, you know, the protesters show up, protesters who are also not pleased with Harris's stance in all of this. But of course, you know, I do think Harris and Walz as the ticket do kind of placate some of the people on the left. They have been not quite as, you know, aggressively pro-Israel as maybe others in the party have been.
Yeah, it is. And you have the peace talks going on, and they know if that's going to continue and the fighting's going to continue, it's going to hurt Democrats, even though President Trump obviously is much more pro-Israel. You have somebody that's showing actually more sympathy towards the Palestinian side, but yet they're paying more of the electoral price, it seems. Steph Kite, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Axios' own political reporter. Back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade Show. We finish up the hour with your calls, or if you want to write me, briankilmeade.com. We have not talked about what's happening in Gaza, the talks that are happening, and what amazing thing is happening in Russia and the Ukraine. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hamas is not ready, and they actually flagged that. They don't have a negotiator there participating. They're participating, through third parties, which I think gives you a sense of where they're coming from. I mean, Netanyahu has had a deal on the table going all the way back since last November, you know, when we actually had a hostage prisoner exchange. The obstacle to that has been Sinwar, the head of Hamas inside of Gaza. He wants a complete withdrawal from Gaza, and he wants a permanent ceasefire. There's no way that the Israelis can agree to something like that, given the fact there's thousands of Hamas fighters that are still alive and still effective as a force inside Gaza.
And you heard me moments ago talk to Steph Kite of Axios saying that they're desperate. is the Biden camp, is the Harris camp, to get this peace deal done or a ceasefire in place so they could stop worrying about these protests and make them look terrible because they're anemic and they don't stand up because they're afraid of alienating their left-wing base and clamp down on the anti-Semitic behavior, this anti-Jewish sentiment, the anti-Israeli demand to divest in our country while slow-walking weapons to Netanyahu, yet giving him support. So right now, the hostage ceasefire negotiations have the U.S., the Egyptians, the Qatari officials, the Israelis, and Hamas has somebody who's observing. But William Burns is representing the U.S. He's the CIA director, seems to be the most competent guy. This guy, Ghazi Hamadi, is a member of Hamas's diplomatic team, Evitt's lead negotiator. Haniyeh was killed, you know, in Tehran, was assassinated, even though we know it's his Israelis, they haven't admitted to it yet. So right now, Israel can't stop with the ceasefire. They could cease and get some hostages out, but they can't cease totally because Hamas is still there. They got to be back again, rocketing their population, killing more innocent people. If you listen to the IDF, they'd kill 56% of the Hamas fighters, an estimated 30,000. Now, our intelligence says we've only killed, or they've only killed 20 to 30% of Hamas. I asked General Keane this morning, and he said, no, I think the IDF is much more accurate. And Iran is poised to attack. They want everybody being nervous to see if they're going to send another 300 rockets and missiles Israel's direction. Now, the other story is what's happening with Ukraine. And this is fascinating. Ukraine's offensive in Russia expands beyond Kursk. Soldiers say troops are seizing largest Russian town yet. They've already had 28 Thursday morning. Zelensky hints at further offensive operations. And what's happening is good and is risky. But now the Russians have to take people off their front line to try to contain the Ukrainians who have breached their border. First people to do it since Hitler did it. New details, though, about the fighting in Belgorod. The Ukraine is trying to hold that town. They say the Ukrainian soldiers are being wounded there, being evacuated across the border to Ukraine's Sunni region because they're having some problems holding on to certain areas because the Russians are trying to blow through their line. Problem for Ukraine. They're much better fighters. They got better weaponry. They don't have enough guys. But by going into Russia, continuing to hit them with drones, blowing up their navy with drones, they could change this whole war.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, but we're a national show. We're also heard around the world. We get emails from Norway and Australia, so we're thrilled with that. You can always get us on the app. Just click on the headsets or go to watch and just scan through because we're seen on Fox Nation. You can also see the stream all the time. This hour, we're going to be joined by Governor Jim Justice, who looks to be the next senator from West Virginia as they flip the Joe Manchin seat to Republican. He used to be a Democrat, and Eric Hovde standing by. He is got the Republican nomination. He wants to be the next senator from Wisconsin in a tough fight right now. And then we're monitoring J.D. Vance is going to be speaking today. Where's J.D.? Oh, he's going to be in Milwaukee. He's going to be doing most of the Midwest campaigning as the Donald Trump has added back an old friend, Corey Lewandowski, to the fray. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We're constantly looking at the situation and making sure that, you know, that we've got what we need in place should there be an attack. We don't have a lot of certainty here.
Right.
It's not exactly clear whether there'll be one.
That is John Kirby wondering if Iran's going to attack back after the head of Hamas was murdered in Tehran. Gaza talks start. Hamas sends an emissary, but not a negotiator, as they continue to lose men and military muscle, but they are still alive as an organization. What Israel needs to do to get the hostages back and fend off Iran.
Number two.
If you have the election tomorrow, I think Harris would be a slight favorite. She's been ahead in most recent polling in the blue wall states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. We have three more months to go. There will be more surprises, and the polls have been wrong before. In both of the last two general elections, they underestimated Trump.
Right. That is Nate Silver from 538. New polls are in, and it looks like Harris higher than Biden, but the honeymoon might just be over looking at the Fox poll. And the DNC, though, just a couple of days away.
Number one.
When I am president, it will be a day one priority to fight to bring down prices. I will take on big corporations that engage in illegal prices.
25 days after announcing she's the nominee, no interviews, zero pressers, no plans. Until today, Kamala outlines her economic vision. Okay, all I see is Bidenomics, and so does Joe Biden. But she doesn't want you to, I guess, as Donald Trump gets ready to pounce and prices soar and inflation remains. But if you listen to Joe Biden, inflation's over. Let's bring in Eric Hovde, the Wisconsin Republican, a U.S. Senate candidate, taking on Tammy Baldwin. So thanks so much for being here. Eric, how's your campaign going?
Fantastic. Good morning, Brian, and good morning to all your listeners. The campaign's going fantastic. We're charging hard. We're staying on the issues about inflation, about the open border. The left has a perfect trifecta. You have Kamala Harris, who was voted the most liberal senator. You have Tim Walz, considered maybe the most liberal governor. And then you got Senator Baldwin, Tammy Baldwin, who I'm running against, who's just, I think, voted the second most liberal senator. So, you know, they've all followed the Biden economic policies, the open border, the defund the police. And, you know, socially, they're crazy. I mean, boys, they all support boys playing in girls' sports, men going in girls' bathrooms. Senator Baldwin, my candidate, gave all of our taxpayer money through an earmark to a transgender clinic, if you can believe this, in Madison, Wisconsin, that helps kids go through that transgender process without notifying their own parents. So, you know, you've got three people that are so far out there on the left, and we just got to get the word out, and I'm doing that, working hard in Wisconsin to get the word out on where she is, because she runs as a chameleon. Acts like she's somewhat moderate, but she's as far left as they come.
So you have some others in battleground states not going to the DNC. Tester's not going. He's trailing in Miami, Montana. Senator Jackie Rosen's not going. She's in a dead heat, it looks like, or slightly up in Nevada. And Senator Sherrod Brown is not going. He's in Ohio in a tough race there. So I'm wondering why Tammy Baldwin's going, because she's in a tough race with you in a battleground state.
You know, she's a rubber stamp for the progressive left. You have to understand, Tammy Baldwin is one of these senators who's been for whole life in politics. From the time she graduated college, she was on a Dane County Board of Supervisors, the State Assembly, in Congress for 16 years, and now in the Senate for 12 years. She has accomplished nothing. I think she has seven bills to her name, and two of them are renaming post offices. So when you think of her, she is a rubber stamp for whatever the progressive left wants. So, you know, it's the DNC convention. She's going to be there. And the other thing is she's running from being in our own state. She's not doing interviews like Kamala Harris. She won't debate me. I've been given one debate on October 18th. Now, think of that. Early voting starts in our state in mid-September. And we usually get 3 to 4 debates between the Senate candidates. She won't debate me because she can't run on any record. She has failed on literally everything.
So how much harder is your job with Kamala Harris running things when Joe Biden was basically dead in the water, about to get crushed, and they do this swap? What have you noticed on the ground in Wisconsin?
I don't think there has been any kind of meaningful change. I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell all your listeners, don't listen to a lot of these public polls. That New York Times poll was a joke, and the left has manipulated polls because they want to suppress giving to candidates or pump up their candidates. I think there's a hard number for President Trump at around 49%. And if you look at President Trump in both 16 and 20, in 16 he was down by 6.5% in my state. He won it. In 20, he was down 7.5%. He lost by 1%. So these polls, you just got to take them with a big grain of salt. I think President Trump is still in the lead in our state. And by the way, it didn't help her by picking Governor Walz, because you got to understand, he was the king of the lockdowns. And he's, you know, the defund the police, what they did to Minneapolis. So a lot of Minnesotans moved out of Minnesota and came over to Wisconsin because they didn't like that politics. So it actually hurt them picking Governor Walz for the state of Wisconsin. So I was thankful when I heard, I was like, oh, you know, she just did me a big benefit.
Well, you mean the coach, the moderate coach?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been totally mischaracterized, whose best friend is one of the imams who's calling for an end to Israel and spouts anti-Semitic catchphrases all the time.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's so out there, you know, like Senator Baldwin, he signed a piece of legislation that if a child wants to go through, you know, the mutilation process or taking these hard chemicals that change their sex and the parents disagree with it, the child can be taken away from the parents. Where do they get off to think that the state has more of a say on a child than the parents do? Who love that child. So it's absolutely crazy where he is. But the whole, you know, this whole group of Democrats are so far out there on the left.
All right. So we're talking to Eric Hovde, who's a Wisconsin Republican U.S. Senate candidate. Well, the Real Clear Average has you down by 6. One of the last polls has you down by 8 to Tammy Baldwin. Let's say they're even remotely correct. You know it's close. How do you close the gap there? Like, what can change in the next 80 days?
Getting out and talking about the message. And by the way, those polls are total junk. We got the big internal polls. They're vastly better than what you're quoting right there. And again, the left likes manipulating polls. But off of that subject, hammering her every day, talking about the issues. She's running from it. I have had more money spent on me attacking me than up to 3 weeks ago than any Republican senator. They spent more money on me. They started first. And they've come now. Money's now starting to be spent on them and hitting her. And I've kicked up my spending in my race. So I love the position I'm in. Ron Johnson was down in 22 on September 1st in the state of Wisconsin by 7%. He ended up winning. And, you know, from the internal polls, we're looking at, you know, maybe down 2-3%. So I love the position I'm in. And now, you know, this airwaves. Air wars is going to start changing, but it's really getting back on the issues, just talking about how she has literally failed on everything. But look, I need people's support. You know, they have a money pipeline. So, if, you know, if somebody wants to contribute, because look, this is Wisconsin's the battleground. You know this, Brian. You talk about it all the time. You know, Kamala Harris has been here. Her first stop, it was her third stop. President Trump is coming in, J.D. Vance, and if I can win this Senate seat, we can take it from a radical lefty into a conservative business guy, and we change the makeup of the Senate, not just for the next 2 years, but potentially the next 4 years. So if people want to help out, send some money to Eric, E-R-I-C, Hovde, H-O-V-D-E .com.
So listen, Frank Luntz, he does his own polling, does his own focus groups. This is what he said, Cut 22.
She's bringing out people who are not interested in voting for either Trump or Biden. So the entire electoral pool has changed. And if it continues in this direction, you have to start to consider Democrats winning the Senate and Democrats winning the House. The actual people who are participating, she's got intensity now. She's got an intensity advantage. She's got a demographic advantage. And I haven't seen anything like this happen in 30 days in my lifetime.
And part of it is it's never happened when you swap out a candidate without going through the primaries. But Frank, Frank Luntz is bringing up what you must be seeing, Eric, in Madison. And that's Democrats feel much more excited about Kamala Harris and are forgetting that she was an invisible joke of a vice president. But having said that, that makes it more challenging for you on the surface, don't you think?
Again, I think this little sugar high bubble is going to come off. And if President Trump and his campaign focus on what she has said, I think a lot of people are going to move away from her. I don't think she's been a big benefit in the state of Wisconsin. Again, her pick with Walz, I think, has been a negative for her in the state of Wisconsin. I can't speak to other states. I can only speak to my state. In the city of Madison, look, Madison's one of the most progressive cities. So, yeah, I think they got a little bit of enthusiasm. But, look, we've got 80-some-odd days. And I think as people come to learn where she stands on issue after issue, I think they're going to move away from her.
All right. We'll see. We'll see what the strategy is if it's unveiled at the pep rally, which is the DNC in Chicago. Thanks so much, Eric. Best of luck.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian. I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You too. 1-866-408-7669. I'll come back and take your calls. Then I got one of the great personalities in politics, Governor Jim Justice, a self-made billionaire, 36, governor of West Virginia, who's en route to replacing Joe Manchin in the Senate. They're going to need a little bit more help and hold on to their seats and get the presidency if they want to control of that. And without it at stake, adding two more states, getting rid of the filibuster, and maybe packing the Supreme Court. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Kamala is reportedly proposing communist price controls. She wants price controls. And if they worked, I'd go along with it too, but they don't work. They actually have the exact opposite impact and effect. But it leads to food shortages, rationing, hunger, dramatically more inflation. Their Inflation Reduction Act, by the way, was a disaster. It's what caused the inflation. Their Inflation Reduction Act was a con job. They actually admitted that it wasn't really for inflation that they did it. They don't know why they did it, but they named it the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a very nice name. Got approved based on that. Unfortunately, people didn't understand it. I understood it. I said that's going to cause tremendous inflation, and it did, among other things like energy.
The Inflation Reduction Act was about converting America's, getting rid of fossil fuels and converting everything to green energy and providing subsidies for electric cars and solar panels. That's what it was. And it was laughed at a year later when they were celebrating the 1 year anniversary. Oh, it was never about inflation. And that, to me, that's between the Afghanistan withdrawal and jamming that down our throats, mislabeling it and bragging about it. That enough to expel Biden and immediately Harris. So it's just maddening to see now price controls. I did not know this, but Richard Nixon tried price controls in the 1970s. I'm just reading about it. It was an epic fail. Why? They were getting frustrated with stubborn inflation. So he said, let me just control these prices. It was not the problem. You got to get the markets free. Bryce is listening to WOSH 1490 over in Wisconsin. Hey, Bryce.
How's it going, Brian? Big fan.
Thank you.
So I've been doing a lot of polling research recently. And I feel like these polls are not taking in the margin of error for Trump. They're underestimating him by a lot. And when you actually put that margin of error into these polls, Trump's still winning. I think that they're dismissing him way too soon.
Well, I mean, look, the Fox polls are still pretty promising. I mean, if you're even or just trailing by 1 or 2 points in battleground states, you're still doing good. You know what's so funny is they're characterizing themselves, Bryce, as underdogs. You're the incumbents. Are you kidding me? You got Air Force One, Air Force Two. You got the built-in PR machine, which is the White House. That's why incumbents win almost all the time. Well, we're underdogs. To who? To Donald Trump, who's got 4 indictments and just had to go off the trail for 3.5 weeks because of a trial? Donald Trump, who's just been almost assassinated, he's still an underdog? Really? So, and while he still can't do outdoor events, and now he'll be able to because they're going to put ballistic shields around him. So, I mean, to me, I think Trump's doing good, except for he had it won. I think, Bryce, what they got to get their minds around is that it's not Joe Biden anymore. And they said, well, even if it's Harris, don't worry about it. She's least popular. Well, what they didn't picture is that she'd be totally wrapped in bubble wrap, kept from interviews, and denying her previous policies and running from the Biden administration, and that the media would buy it and not demand to find out why you're not against fracking anymore, why you're not against decriminalizing border crossings anymore, why you're not for the new Green Deal, even if it means blowing up the filibuster. We never got that, and no one can believe the press is being this compliant. So having said all that, it's up to them to adjust, and I think they're going to do a lot of these ads. But they got to also say, wait, we only have so much money. How many ads do you want me to take while the DNC is going on? So I think it's almost like keep your head down, steady the ship, and get ready. Right leading into Labor Day, we'll take the message back. Steve on WABC in New York. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you doing today?
Great. What's on your mind?
A my mind is about the House. For the past month, they should have had hearing after hearing after hearing with every cabinet head and talk about the incompetency of Biden. How long have they known it? And always refer to it as the Biden-Harris administration and all of the failures that have been going on and how he has been hiding from the press right after the debate. But then all of a sudden he decides he's going to bail. But they could have made this front and center with the American people and just kept this whole thing in the spotlight and taken any of the spotlight away from Harris.
Right. It's hard to be fair to them. It's hard when no one's asking questions. I mean, they literally watched President Biden being knifed in the back, the front, kicked to the curb and walked over. And the press wasn't even curious. They said, OK, Biden's out. Harris is in. Isn't she fantastic?
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
People don't know who she is. As far as the personal attacks, I'm very angry at her that she'd weaponized the justice system against me and other people. Very angry at her. I think I'm entitled to personal attacks. I don't have a lot of respect for her. I don't have a lot of respect for her intelligence.
And that is the president of the United States, after giving a very crisp speech about the economy and inflation, took some questions. And they said, you know, a lot of people want you to stop the personal attacks. And that was his response. The question is the lawfare and what has been done to him and his family, his reputation. They're not doing it as much now, but they were doing it a lot before, say, convicted felon. I'm not watching a lot of her speeches. They're the same one. And it bothers him beyond belief, especially these cases are pure folly. The one in New York is a joke. The civil trials were an absolute travesty. And then they lock him up for 3.5 weeks. And now he's got sentencing in September he's got to worry about. So I think the president's got to show more discipline than that. 78 years old. He knows so much is on the take for him personally to win. When he does personal attacks, I agree with Governor Haley. It doesn't help. Crowd size doesn't help. Her nationality doesn't help. Her gender doesn't help. All you do is focus on her track record. And if you do a good job with a good team, you should win. But how does Governor Jim Justice feel about that? He's the 36th governor of West Virginia. He's never lost an election. And he's en route up by about 30 points to being the next senator from West Virginia, flipping that seat, who was, by the way, a Democrat who flipped being to becoming a Republican. Governor, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good. First off, on that topic I bumped in with. You understand President Trump as well as anyone outside his family. And you also understand what it's like doing business at that level. So could you tell me your thoughts about what he said?
Well, I'm sure he's frustrated. And Brian, it hurts. I mean, in all honesty, you know, the attacks that come on me, you know, are surely not any fun. And from the standpoint of what President Trump is doing, you know, we all know he surely doesn't need to do this, and really and truly, what he takes every day is really tough. And in addition to that, for God's sake, to live, and you know, the man was shot the other day, and so with all that being said, you know, I love him with all my soul, and really and truly, I know him, and I know him really, really well as his family, and I can just tell you that. He's a tough guy, but at the same time, everybody just looks over, you know, all this stuff that he has to deal with all the time, you know, all these ridiculous attacks and everything, because people really just would do anything and everything almost just to be sure that he doesn't become our next president. I can tell you that the inside track about your inside baseball, rather, about Donald Trump is something that a lot of people don't see. And that is he genuinely, genuinely cares. And the other flip side is just this. A lot of people think he's just a tough guy and this stuff doesn't hurt and they're crazy. I'm telling you, you know, absolutely it hurts and it really hurts and it really bothers him. And you know, from time to time, he may very well, you know, just say something maybe that he would like to take back or whatever. But But I'm telling you, he's a good man, and what all's happening, you know, or has happened to all these, you know, attacks, one right after another, right after another, right after another, they take a toll. They take a big-time toll, and they especially take a toll as we get a little older and everything. I mean, he's not 35 years old that can, you know, run up 18 different mountains. But with all that being said, it's
everything you said is right. Governor Justice, we're just trying to straighten out your signal just a little bit. It's starting to break up. But, you know, another thing you guys have in common, you're a great golfer. He's a great golfer. So, and you also have people attacking you. If people Google you, you can see how they're coming after you and your business, even though you've had unbelievable amount of success and doesn't mean you're not a target. And you still want to get back to the country and you still want to coach basketball for free. So that's what makes you such a unique character. You're going to have a big impact in the Senate when you get there. But you also know this. You got to do what it takes to win. The refs might be bad. The weather might be bad. The stadium might be unfair. No matter what happens. And do you agree that if you keep it to the facts, keep it to the economy, keep gender and race out of it, that's the best recipe for winning?
Well, it probably is. I mean, there's no question. That's probably exactly right. And, Brian, I'd say one more thing. And, you know, I tried to tell everybody, you know, but, you know, Republicans in general, you know, they just kept beating the drum, you know, that Biden had to go, and he should have gone 2 years ago or maybe even 3 years ago. But with all that being said, I still contend that what an absolute not very smart move to beat the drum every day for Biden, you know, to absolutely, you know, get out of the race.
Well,
and get out of the way and everything else. And now all of a sudden, you know, we've got a horse race and we've got a rejuvenated Democratic Party, money coming in every direction. And President Trump can't make any bad steps because really, I mean, he could lose. And that would be catastrophic, in my opinion.
Because there's a people that think that if he does lose, that means you don't get the Senate. You're the 50th. You know, if everybody holds their seat, you'll be the 50th Senate, but the vice president will be breaking you guys down like they're doing now. So you'll flip Joe Manchin's seat. But, you know, Montana, Tim Sheehy looks good in Montana, but who knows? And then you got Eric Hovde we've had on earlier in Wisconsin. He's trailing by 4 or 5. And you got some other tough battles across the country over in Nevada. So the ripple effects would be titanic because this country won't be center left. It'll be way left. Don't you agree, Governor? You used to be in the Democratic Party. This is not a Joe Manchin, Jim Justice Democratic Party.
No. This is that's just all there is to it. And Brian, listen, you know, I grew up a Republican through and through. My family, all across the board, all Republicans. And with all that being said, I ran as a Democrat because, to be perfectly honest, the Republican leadership in West Virginia at the time, I felt like they were shortchanging business. And I was not happy with them. And so really and truly, they already had their candidate. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to run, and I'm going to run as a Democrat, and I'm going to beat them. And I did. And then all of a sudden, you know, when I quickly realized, good God, a living, I couldn't get anything done in any way, I said, well, this is completely silly. I told my family, and then I went to the Oval Office and I sat with Donald Trump and I told him next and that I was going to change. So the net of the whole thing is just this. The National Democratic Party today is not the Democratic Party of good conservative, you know, sound thinking people. The National Democratic Party today is a bunch of lunatics, and really, if we don't really watch out, you know, this country just going more and more and more crazy, whether it be all the woke stuff or all the stuff happening on the campuses and, you know.
But wait a second, Governor, I got to stop you there. This is new Democratic Party, no longer to criminalize border crossings. They're no longer for that. They're no longer for the new Green Deal. They're no longer for letting everybody into the border. She's now for border security. Now they're no longer against fracking. They're no longer against offshore drilling. What are we to believe, Governor? What they've done or what they're saying they will do?
Well, listen, Brian, in West Virginia, at least, you know, we judge people on their deeds. And really, when it really boils right down to it, Brian, if any of us believe that this is the newfound Democratic Party, that they're not really for all the things that they've done, then shame on us again. I mean, that's just all there is to it, because I know exactly what they'll do. You know, the very second that they're in control, they flip right back to where they were. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi probably said it the very best. She said, listen, you know, if I can help you and you brag on me, then do that. If you want to trash me every day, that's okay too, but just win. And that's where the Republicans absolutely just go astray, because they want to deal with their platform or this or that and everything else. And at the end of the day, we don't win when we should win. You know, a good coach, and I've coached forevermore, and I love kids in every way, and you know that. But a good coach never loses when he's supposed to win. And he wins oftentimes when he's supposed to lose. But that's where we screw this up. I mean, how could we have not dominated in 2022? And on and on and on. You know, I mean, we cannot continue to lose when we're supposed to win. And Brian, I truly believe,
right,
you know, that our antics, and let me just say just this, that with us just, I mean, Joe Biden was the gift that just kept on giving. Why in the world did we want him out of the way?
But, Governor, you know, it's not even worth talking about. But I want you to hear her new partner, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Here's a little of, you tell me if this is a good ad. They're supposed to show interaction and chemistry. Cut 16.
I called you, Tim.
Yes.
You didn't answer, Tim.
I know.
What happened?
The most important call of my life. It popped up, and we didn't recognize the caller ID, and it went to voicemail.
So it goes on, and they talk about all the things they like to eat and going back and forth. Who's Governor Tim Walz? You guys get a chance to interact all the time. Who is he?
Well, I know exactly who he is, you know, but if you go to Minnesota and you go down the streets and you talk with the folks there and everything, I honest to Pete, don't think there's a chance in the world he could get elected in Minnesota as the dog catcher, you know, but really, who he is just a double down of Kamala Harris. And you know, it's just, Brian, it just doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, these people think really that they're so elitist that they think that a commercial like that, you know, that they're cool or they're cute.
He's for financing, not telling the parents when it comes to transitioning, putting tampons in girls' bathrooms. He was for a snitch line during COVID lockdown, COVID-19 lockdown. He wanted neighbors to report on neighbors. We watched him allow Minneapolis to burn down for 3 days, refused to call the National Guard. And we know that he's got an imam that loves to hate Jews, that is at every major event that he's at, and he's been on the record praising him. So I don't know how he runs from that. Also denying that he got a DWI in 98. Said, yeah, I got it, but it was a misunderstanding, and I didn't drink anything. So, I mean, how long is he going to get a pass on this stuff?
Brian, you won't like me saying this, but, you know, he's going to get a pass on it forever. You know, in all honesty, that's where we as Republicans, you know, have got to really pivot. I mean, and really stay on task, what you're saying, you know, but the media is going to give him a pass forever. And they're going to bundle up the package and dress it up and make it look as good as it can possibly look. And in all fairness, you know, the voters oftentimes just get glazed over, and they don't even have any idea what they're even voting for.
How much responsibility, because you're about taking personal responsibility, Governor Justice, how much responsibility do Republicans have? I mean, the Trump campaign's got more money than any other between their super PACs. Money's not going to be an issue. It's up to them to do what they did with Dukakis, what George H.W. Bush did with Dukakis, what George W. Bush did with John Kerry. whether it's a SWIFTBO reporting what kind of service he actually did, or Governor Dukakis talking about what a liberal he actually was. Don't you believe that it's up to the campaign to take it upon themselves to define this guy? And these
100%.
Two?
100%. Really and truly. That's why, at the end of the day, us continuing as Republicans, us continuing to run through the forest screaming at the top of our lungs, you know, he did this, he did this, he did this, he did this. And before you know it, the voters are completely confused, glazed over. The media is beating the drum every day, you know, in support. And before you know it, we lose. Absolutely, 100%, you know, Brian, that really and truly, we, the campaign, absolutely needs to, you know, shore itself up, get on the right track, and absolutely without any question win. You know, but 100%, if we lose, our fault. You know,
right.
And we don't need to be blaming anybody else. If we lose, our fault.
Do you like the pick of J.D. Vance?
You know, I think J.D. Vance is a good man. I think he's got a great story. You know, if I could have waved a wand and everything, you know, I would have loved to have considered Mike Pompeo. Or Carson, you know, I thought they were really strong, especially Ben Carson, you know, strong possible picks and everything. J.D. Vance has got a great story, and he's got a lot of energy and everything else, but I really fear that a lot of the voters that J.D. Vance can bring to the table, President Trump already had, you know, and so you know, I don't know him well. He's got a great story to tell. He's a great man. He's a great patriot and everything, and a lot of energy, and I think he'll do a good job.
All right, Governor, I'll talk to you on One Nation this weekend on Saturday night at 9 o'clock. Governor Justice did his job. He's up by 30 in West Virginia. That's one seat ready to flip. What about the others? We'll discuss it. Governor, thanks so much. Always great to talk to you.
All right, Brian. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
All right. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's not sustainable because it's artificial. If you just put a lid on something, and if you want to explore what really happens, just go back to the 1970s. We tried it. There was a whole movement for price controls across everything because inflation was out of control and rampant, just like it is now. And so it's been tried. It does not work.
So that is Dave Ramsey talking about what's going to be proposed today, and that is Kamala Harris's first policy speech in North Carolina. She expects to win. And nobody's won since 2008 Barack Obama. So she's going to be talking about price control. She's going to talk about anti-price gouging, putting that out together. She's also going to say we're going to have health care bills relief. So we're going to pay your health care bills. Really? Okay, we're already paying student loan debt. Is that okay? Because she's not paying it. We're all paying it. It goes into the pot or just goes into debt. Is that all right? And also, we're giving money for first-time home buyers. Now, there's FHA and all these types of loans already in our system for that, that it provides this for you. But that's not enough, because she needs, this is outright buying of votes and vilifying corporations who employ people. And you're talking about a grocery store business, supermarkets in your neighborhood. Don't get mad at them. Don't listen to this rhetoric. On average, their profit margin is 1.6%. Other businesses, on average, a profit margin of 8.6%. So they are not the problem. You can't continue to actually vilify rich people, corporations. And I don't understand that people work for them. People work to become that.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Glad you're here. Ian O'Connor's going to be here at the bottom of the hour, the four-time New York Times bestseller, author of five books, his latest being Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. He did a phenomenal job, so good that Aaron Rodgers contacted him and said, if it's not too late, I'll sit down and talk to you. So, yeah, I guess technically an unauthorized biography, but he gave his side of the story with his family situation, with the whole vaccine situation, leaving the Packers, being there with Brett Favre, getting out of there, coming to the Jets, tearing his Achilles tendon, going into literally a cave for a week. He's a different guy, one of the most interesting people in sports. You know, and by the way, top five quarterback of all time, Ian O'Connor will be here with us, so it might be a good break from the politics. And then Shannon Bream is standing by. Shannon's the anchor of Fox News Sunday, getting set to go to the DNC. She's Fox's chief legal analyst and author of The Love Stories of the Bible Speak. But we're not going to talk about the Bible now. Is that okay, Shannon?
Yes, it's always in the back of my mind for all conversations.
Right. At any point, you can pull out a psalm and I'll listen. But in the meantime,
you might need it.
Yes.
To help calm down. The world is crazy.
I know. I always need it. When are you going to Chicago?
I'm here.
Oh, you're there.
I am here, yeah, in our beautiful Chicago bureau. It's gorgeous. Very fancy, but I'm trying to get all the snacks and the things just as you demand them so that when you get here, the red carpet will be ready and you will have no problem.
Right, not going, but I know I appreciate the sentiment.
Just in case you decide to change your mind.
Right, yeah, of course. It's always my decision, as you know. Shannon,
right, of course.
So how big a deal are these protests? I mean, that's all anybody was talking about, the point where they were thinking President Biden wouldn't even go. He'd do something remote. Is this still a buzz there about that?
Yeah, there is. I mean, people are very uncomfortable and a little worried about what they think might unfold here. I mean, you know, we've covered this. There's been all this legal wrangling back and forth about permits and, you know, protection zones and all that kind of stuff. And there have been reports, too, that the pro-Israel groups that tried to get permits here were not as successful. But we know the pro-Palestinian groups did. And they say, listen, we want Democrats to listen to us. We don't like what they've been doing on Gaza. And so we plan to make some noise.
Yeah, we'll see how far they're backed up and if it ends up being something that, I mean, I'm sure we're going to be covering it. If it ends up being something that ends
up
being
still in the headlines. Is that why you're not coming? You don't want to have to do the walking miles out of the way and all that kind of stuff. You're very delicate.
I think that would be one of the positive things about coming, but I think it's more 8 to 5 in the morning. 5 to 8 in the morning. What kind of guests are we going to get that we can't get here?
Mm-hmm.
But that's my personal. So I want you to hear from Hatim Abedinaya, Coalition of the March and the DNC. He is extremely frustrated. Okay. Listen to this. Cut 28.
We will say it forever. They cannot restrict the people's movement. They cannot repress the people's movement. We will be there. We will chant Free Palestine. We will say stop U.S. aid to Israel. And we will hold the criminal Joe Biden and the criminal Kamala Harris and the criminal Anthony Blinken and the criminal Jeffries and Schumer and Pelosi and Durbin and Duckworth and every single one of those Democrats in the top leadership who have the blood of 40,000 Palestinians on their hands.
Well, that's not a good start if you're a politician, a Democratic politician looking to create a positive attitude.
No, I think that there's going to be some angst here. Listen, this has been a real split, as we've covered again and again within the party. Those who have, you know, been tough on, you know, on campus where there have been anti-Semitic protests and kinds of things, and others who've said, you know, hey, we hear you. We're sympathetic to what's going on with the pro-Palestinian cause. There's been some real tension within the party over that. And that's something that the vice president and everybody else who's speaking here this week is going to have to navigate. Like, where are you exactly? She'll say and has said, you know, Israel has every right to defend itself. But there are also questions about whether she entertained in a conversation with some of these folks the idea of an arms embargo to Israel. So imagine that's going to be front and center here, because it's going to be inescapable in the streets of Chicago.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt about it. They feel like the Democrats feel like they're on a roll because they have anybody but Joe Biden. And Joe Biden's going to speak on Monday. What do you think that tells you about where his stance in the party is if he's speaking on Monday?
I think that they feel like his era is over. It's time to be good to the elder statesman and move on. But they very much wanted to move on, as we all know. I think it's also a little bit awkward here because, you know, he feels very betrayed and stabbed in the back by former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who will be here. Former President Barack Obama, this is his hometown. I imagine he's going to get an enormous round of applause and welcome. He's very popular within the party here. And so I think it's awkward for President Biden, who feels like these people shoved me out the door, and I think I should still be on the ticket.
And if you want to know why he shouldn't be, here he is trying to get off script. Cut 11.
Not a single Republican voted for this bill, period. Not one in the entire Congress. Now, the reason I say that is not to make a political point about them, not if they've gotten their lesson, but guess what? They want to, the guy we're running against, what's his name? Donald Dump or Donald whatever. They want to get rid of this, what we passed.
So that was good.
Yeah, it reminds me of that. You know the deal. You know, talking about the Constitution or whatever it was. I mean, you know the thing. Listen, and he's going to want to keep making the argument that he's got energy. He could still be engaged. But clearly, you know, the top donors and the top party bosses told him, yeah, you're the president, but we're telling you it's time to get to stepping. So, you know, Monday night he does his thing. Does he go to Rehoboth and watch the rest from there? It's kind of a weird turn of events.
Everything's beyond weird. So here's some of the things that is going to be mentioned in the economic plan today. Harris-Waltz are going to cut taxes for middle-class families. I'm sure Joe Biden never thought of that. A new $6,000 child tax credit for families with children. Cut taxes for frontline workers. Cut taxes to help American afford, help people with Obamacare. We're still subsidizing Obamacare to the 10th degree. Points on lowering grocery costs. Advance the first ever federal ban on price gouging. It's like we're going to start banning burglary. Nobody is pro price gouging. But
no,
and by the way, try to prove it. Give me an example of it. No one's ever proven it anywhere.
Well, and in most states, it's illegal already, you know, at the state level. I mean, I'm very familiar with this growing up in Florida. And every time we had a hurricane, you know, the attorney general, D or R, whoever they are, is always like, we're watching for gas. We're watching for water. Like, you get crazy and exploit the situation. We're, you know, we're going to crack down on you. But I mean, if you look at profit margins for grocers right now, it makes them a good punching bag, but they're not anywhere near, you know, their largest profit margins they've had over time. So to tell them, like, you're doing something that's completely within the realm of normal, but you better be on your best behavior. It's a good talking point, but like so many of these things, you know, a part of the package today we understand too is going to be something about a $25,000 help for homeowners, for first-time purchasers and people with, you know, good credit from paying rent, that kind of stuff. Like, we all know that nothing's free. So where is that coming from? Is it a wealth transfer essentially from one taxpayer to another? I mean, you know, of course, everybody wants freedom and better prices and all kinds of good, you know, themes that we hear. But when it gets into the details, we got to figure out who's paying for it and how.
Right. And, you know, so we'll see. When you put your economic plan out there, then it's up for debate, because the other thing you could do is compare it. If she's not going to give an interview, you compare it to what she said in the past. Listen to this. Cut 13.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. So, yeah. And starting with what we can do on day one around public lands, right? Under my Medicare for All plan, yes, employers are not going to be able to dictate the kind of health care that their employees get. It must have and adopt a Green New Deal. On day one as president, I would re-enter us in the Paris Agreement and put in place so we would be carbon neutral by 2030. I am prepared to get rid of the filibuster to pass a Green New Deal.
Okay, that stuff would get her 9 votes. And all in California. So now she can't go on that anymore. So what, are we supposed to believe her then or now? And how is she going to explain it? Fracking's a pretty deliberate thing. It's not like it's a shade of gray. I want to frack a little.
No, it was. I'm completely banning it. And now, not out of her mouth, but out of someone connected to the campaign, she doesn't feel that way anymore. So, again, we just need an explanation. People evolve on political issues and how they feel about political candidates. I mean, just but are we supposed to just take these trickles and little bits of information from people close to the campaign or close to her? It seems that she's made such, I mean, enormous, you know, 180s on so many multiple issues that we should hear that from the candidate.
So I want you to hear what President Biden was asked this by Peter Ducey about him distancing about to distance herself from Bidenomics. Cut 18.
How much does it bother you that Vice President Harris might soon, for political reasons, start to distance herself from your economic?
She's not going to.
Wishful thinking. Listen to this. Cut 19.
economics continue under Vice President Harris.
The economy is going to continue with all those reservation taxes working. In case you haven't noticed, it's working.
The economy is going to continue, he says. In case you haven't noticed, it's working. So that's a... Basically, she's going to use everything but the word Bidenomics. That's what he thinks.
She did like Bidenomics. We have that soundbite, too. She right. thought it was good and it was working. And so how much does she distance herself from him when he says, oh, she's not going to at all? Like you said, it might be wishful thinking. Maybe he's just out of the loop. Maybe nobody's told him, you know, what the plan is. But again, if you've been the president or the vice president, you've been part of this administration for 3.5 years, a time when people have run through their savings, they've run up record credit card debt, and they tell us in polling across the board that they were better off under President Trump's policies, she's going to have to do a huge distancing of herself from the Biden policies on the economy, or, you know, she's going to have to tell people why they are so great. And he says they're working, and yes, things are moving in the right direction. A rough 3.5 mm-hmm. years, and we're not back to where we were even. You know,
before I find out, Shannon, before I find out what's on your show, a legal question. It's a New York case, but it's well within your repertoire. It looks like the president's legal team is going to ask for a delay on sentencing in mm-hmm. September to after the election. What goes into that decision on whether the judge will say yes, even though he decided not to recuse himself again, even though his daughter advised Kamala Harris, just like she's advised other political Democratic heavyweights. So he doesn't recuse himself. Now they're saying delay. Now, last time Alvin Bragg did not stand in the way of a delay. What do you think now?
Well, I think that I wouldn't expect on will give a delay. I mean, it is within his purview to his arguments and move forward. And I mean, the argument is that it's, you know, we're in the middle of the unique situation. Trump's team calls it election interference. A lot of people would agree with that. But it's up to the judge to decide what he's going to do. Pretty steadfast that they are going to stick with that date. You know, without their warning in the last couple of days, this could be a judge that says, we're going to sentence President Trump to jail. There will be, you know, appeals and all kinds of things like that. But it's Merton's purview.
And by the way, it just reinforces how much this election should mean to President Trump personally than ever before. And now they add Corinne Lewandowski into the mix. He's pretty much a sledgehammer. That's an interesting person to add in, don't you think? If you don't have to answer every question, Shannon, so that's okay. We might have lost Shannon Bream. Shannon, who's going to be on your show? Did we really lose it? Do we know who's going to be on our show? Pete, were you going to leave it as a surprise? We don't know.
I believe J.D. Vance. I'm not sure who the other guest is.
Maybe it's for the whole hour. You know what's going to happen? Shannon will text us back, and I'll be able to tell you who's going to be on Fox News Sunday. But it'll be a big show. Show's never been better, ever. And it's going to be coming to you from the DNC. And even though you might not be sold on Kamala Harris, you need to know the tactics that she's going to employ. Ian O'Connor in 10 minutes. Your call's next. And I see every line being occupied. 1-866, except one, 408-7669.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The point is just that across everything, prices went up. And the reason that happened is that the government spent money like crazy and the Fed printed money to let that happen. And so when the government does that, we get inflation. And it's something that we all learned in our first economics class. And it's kind of stunning that the Biden administration has been in denial about right. it the whole time. And so she should have started day one on this. And I don't have any faith that she would, if elected, start the next day one.
Kevin Hassid, who's as good as he gets when it comes to the economy and very valuable to the Trump team, was with me this morning on Fox and Friends. And he just talked about price controls and some of the things they were proposing, more spending, and the role of the rescue package of billions of dollars, $1.9 trillion. You thought that Obama wanted a lot after the collapse of the economy in 2008. He wanted $350 billion. Please don't tell me that you don't believe that $1.9 trillion into our system, focused for the most part on a green agenda, doesn't hurt America in the long run and didn't play a role with inflation that still lingers today, and which, of course, ripple effect, high interest rates, which means you can't sell your house. And it's hard for you to rationalize buying a house unless it's an absolute desperate situation. Susan in upstate New York. Hey, Susan, listen on WABC.
Okay, so when are the Republicans going to make education reform, school choice, charter schools, bring it right up to the economic issue? Because this disproportionately affects minorities, no doubt, but it affects the whole country. In Chicago, only 2% of children, or 12% of children, can read at grade level.
Unbelievable.
Okay, this if we spend so much on education, and the results absolutely suck. And the Republicans have a great record on it. Minorities want this greatly. The country needs it as much as any other policy. And Trump even got charter schools for Washington, D.C., not Obama. Biden and Harris, they tried to get rid of them. When are they going to hammer this issue?
I hear you. That's a very good point, Susan. Sometimes you forget about education, but when you talk about school choice, that goes against the teachers' unions, but it benefits minorities most. And also school vouchers, give them that voucher to get into that private school that maybe you can, your grades get you in, but your finances don't. And for Democrats to be against that is anti-minority. If you're trying to win black votes, Hispanic votes, in many cases, they're the working class communities. That's how you do it. They should be bringing that up. After the economy, education, not really in the top five, but you could make it there. Alex in Brooklyn. Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. You know, I think that Trump needs to go out of his comfort zone for the sake of the American people. He needs to learn some self-control, which is something he hasn't done in the past, because not everything that's true needs to be said. You could be right, but stupid at the same time. Like, Kamala is wrong, but smart in the way she's campaigning. And, you know, if I would say Brian is a terrible talk show host on your show, it would be true, but it would be stupid, because then you'd get me off the phone. I wouldn't be able to make my point. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. But
Alex, give me an example. Tell me if you think this is right. This is what my emails are coming in from people I don't know. This is not about Trump winning. It's about them winning. In the beginning, it was, wow, Trump's this phenomenal person. 2016, they thought he was illegitimate. 2020, did he win or not? In 2024, the country looks so dramatically different. If Kamala Harris wins, Trump is a vehicle. Now, it's not about Donald Trump finishing off his legacy. It's about America not losing. And that's why there's so many people want him to show additional discipline. You have the issues. You know the business. You have the team. You know who to put in to play. You know mistakes you've made in the past. You know how to straighten it out. And you got 4 years to do it. But you're not going to have the opportunity if you don't show more discipline. But everything I said, it's not just to make Trump win. It's to make America win. And that's why some are losing their patience with the personal attacks. Is she black or is she Indian? Who cares? Is she male or female? I don't care. What does she stand for? What would you do different? You have everything on your side. And plus, you got unbelievable charisma. You can command an audience and you can command a camera.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, touchdown, Green Bay. Approaching the two-minute warning here in Arlington, over the middle, caught, touchdown, Greg Jennings. Rodgers looking left, comes to his right, Jennings, touchdown. This ball is incomplete, but it was a fourth down pass, and Green Bay will take over. The final snap of Super Bowl 45. The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
And there you go. And that, of course, Joe Buck on the call. Packers win the Super Bowl. The only one for Aaron Rodgers, 31-25. And that was a big win for him. And you thought there were more were coming. More haven't. But doesn't mean he hasn't had a spectacular career. And he's one of the biggest, most controversial names in sports. And that's one of the reasons why Ian O'Connor tackled the topic. Out of the Darkness, the name of the book, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, comes to light. Ian O'Connor, congratulations. I'm through it. It's a fantastic, another fantastic book, a follow-up to Belichick and the Derek Jeter book. What made you pick Aaron Rodgers?
Well, Well, Brian, I know you've written more bestsellers than I could count, so it means a lot coming from you. I was actually going to do a LeBron bio, and then another LeBron book came out, and I switched over to Aaron Rodgers because he got traded into our backyard here in New York. And I thought he was a fascinating figure and compelling and mysterious. And beyond that, Vince Lombardi coached at my high school in New Jersey. So I've always had a Packer fascination. And I decided that Rodgers was probably the most prominent American male athlete who hadn't had a defining bio written about him. So I wanted to take it on.
And it's so interesting, so many facets. If it was just a really great player on a historic team, small town America, title town, it's interesting. That would be good. But he's somebody that became a national prominence because he took over for a legend, Brett Favre. Came into national prominence because he had national ads like State Farm. And then, of course, he had high-profile girlfriends from Olivia Munn to Danica Patrick. We saw that. Great-looking guy, doesn't hurt. Winning a Super Bowl certainly helps. But there's something about Aaron Rodgers that people can't unwind. What is it about him?
He's a contrarian, Brian. He's also a chameleon. He's a rebel with a cause. He's a rebel without a cause. He's very, very hard to pin down. But that attracted me to the subject. I like figures like that and trying to figure them out. And he was elusive, I'll say that, and just like he is on the field. But at the end of the day, his public image completely changed with COVID. His whole life changed. And his stance and, of course, his four words, "Yeah, I've been immunized," when he wasn't vaccinated. I don't think he's recovered from that public relations hit. And for the first time, he admitted to me in the book that he should have just told his truth, which I told him. I said, if you told your truth, which was you were allergic to an ingredient in Pfizer and Moderna and you were concerned about Johnson & Johnson side effects, if I were a columnist sitting in that room, I was vaxxed at the time, but I would have found that to be a reasonable position, and I don't think I would have ripped you, and I don't think you would have gotten half the criticism you got in November when the truth came out. And then he basically agreed and said, yeah, I should have just told the truth that I didn't want to take the vaccine over health concerns. And really, he hasn't totally made up that ground, Brian, and recovered from that, and it is unfortunate.
A couple of things. In a way, I don't think he cares, because it created controversy at the time. But now it looks like the more people step back from the mania, there's a lot of smart people, powerful people like Joe Rogan on down, like Novacek, who took some heat. And now people are saying, man, you know, maybe we did overreact. They told us the vaccine was going to, if you get it, you're not going to get the virus. And you did. I mean, Anthony Fauci got it again. So do you think that the more you push him, judging by the profile you did on him, the more he gets defiant?
Yeah, he has leaned in and he's dug in his heels ever since COVID, whether it's conspiracy theories, the Jimmy Kimmel thing, which is a whole nother story. But you're right. And even with conspiracy theories, I mean, some of those usually end up being proven true. certainly not all of them. But yeah, his stance. The one thing I'll say about him, Brian, is he is a fearless public speaker.
He is.
And on a level, I commend that, because most people, including myself, are not. And when he has a position and a belief, he is not afraid of the consequences of defending that belief in the public arena. He's proven that time and time again. And I think I do this in the book. I give him some credit for that, because it's a rare trait.
So you point out, too, that, you know, now a lot of conservatives like him because he did that. But also they didn't like him maybe technically when he was coming out for Kaepernick. When Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee,
he was firmly
in his corner, right?
Yeah, and that's where he's a chameleon, because before COVID, he was considered a socially aware athlete who backed Kaepernick. He supported athletes, their right to kneel, even though he didn't do that. There was an anti-Muslim slur shouted from the crowd after the terrorist attack in Paris, and he rebuked that fan, and President Obama sent him a letter thanking him for doing that. And then all of a sudden COVID happened and his image went the other way. The liberal media that had really supported him turned on him and he fought back. And here we are where we are with him. And I'll say this, and I think you grew up a Jets fan. If he wins a Super Bowl with the Jets, and victory shouldn't be confused with virtue, but I think that a victory, as we know in sports, wipes away a lot of on-field and off-field perceived sins and mistakes. So he can do that still. He could change everything.
I know, and he's back. But he did disappear and go to Egypt instead of the OTAs. A lot of people are upset by that. A couple of things. people should understand this. Even though he's smarter, great looking, very poised, very diverse, he seems to have everything. You have to understand, this guy overcame much more than almost any athlete that I read about that ends up being one of the best at anything. I mean, people should understand that out of high school, he had zero options to play quarterback. It was only because a junior college coach in his neighborhood just was indefatigable in recruiting him, begging his parents to let him go, saying he only needs his 1 year. He would not have had a chance maybe at an NFL career, let alone a college career. And then because he was, I guess, a little small and not very, tall then, and I guess not very, very muscular. He goes there and he kills it in junior college, and still nobody's interested in him. It took a tight end to be recruited to California. And he said, by the way, you should check out on the tape, according to your book, Ian, on the tape, he said he included some great passes from Aaron Rodgers, his quarterback.
That's right. Yeah.
And then he says, who is this guy? Then the coach came to see him at practice. They have a full practice. And he said, can I take him now? And if Cal doesn't recruit Aaron Rodgers, Purdue had turned him down. Illinois had turned him. Nobody was interested in Aaron Rodgers, right?
That's right. And I'll say this, Brian. When I was sitting in his backyard in Malibu at his mansion on the Pacific Ocean, beautiful place, $30 million home, and I'm thinking to myself, this guy is a self-made man because he was overlooked and undervalued at every turn in his football life. And no one ever gives him credit for that either. He created this on his own. He had no help from anybody. And so if he has a gigantic chip on his shoulder, which he does, there's a reason for that. And it's amazing to think that his entire recruiting experience coming out of high school was a JUCO coach who lived about five or six houses away, knocking on his door and convincing his mother that her son, who got 1310 on the SATs, now has to go to community college. So, yeah, he comes from that place, and that's definitely a part right now of who he is.
So Aaron Rodgers stars at Cal, was 23 for 23 against USC, Pete Carroll's USC juggernaut, and everyone's seeing him, and he thinks he's going to go number one overall, or Alex Smith to the 49ers. He always dreamed of being Joe Montana and playing for the Niners. He thinks he's got a real shot at being number one. So they send him, they say, come to New York and sit in the big green room. We want to see the dramatics as you get drafted. He drops to 23, and he becomes a national, I don't think a joke, but everyone starts going, oh, my God, look at who's this Aaron Rodgers guy. Nobody's drafting him. Not only is he not number one, he might drop out of the entire first round. After he gets picked by the Packers, Green Bay is furious because they have a quarterback. Listen to Aaron Rodgers being interviewed. Cut 39.
A couple of weeks ago, Aaron, you were the clear-cut number one. What's changed over that time?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. I haven't changed anything. I think it's just perceptions of me or maybe needs of the teams at the spots. And I'm not too worried. I'm excited about going to a team that wants me and making an impact right away.
So, I mean, that just when you think you're out of the woods and you beat the naysayers, that happens. I know everybody wants to be a first-round draft pick, but that was embarrassing, correct?
Oh, sure. It was humiliating, and it was on national TV, obviously. That was the first NFL draft reality show. It happened the same day that the very first video was uploaded on YouTube. So that was a fitting turn of events. And then he had to deal with Brett Favre, the legend, who didn't want him there. And he had to overcome that. The fans didn't want Aaron Rodgers. And he became a first ballot Hall of Famer through the singular force of his will, really. And again, a lot of that gets discounted in the public discussion of who he is now. But he created this career. He's got a chance to win a Super Bowl in New York for a franchise that hasn't been there since January of 69. And he's worthy of that. He deserves that kind of ending to a career where a lot of people think he's the most talented quarterback ever. So hopefully he can pull that off.
Here's Brett Favre talking about not mentoring Aaron Rodgers and doing the best to ice him out, really. Cut 44.
There are some that would say, you're the legend, the face of the franchise. It should be on you to be the one reaching out.
I think as a starter, my job's hard enough to win ball games and be a leader. You're not a babysitter. And I'm not by no means talking about Aaron. I mean, he's the starter now. So the next quarterback comes in, whether he's a first-round pick or third-round pick or a free agent, but they like him. Nowhere does it say that you have to take that guy under your wing and teach him the ropes. You don't have to do anything but win ball games for whoever it is you're the starting quarterback for. Whether or not you take a guy under your wing means really nothing.
Now, how did he, obviously Brett Favre did that and he's a rock star there, but, and maybe arguably Aaron Rodgers is better, but then how did Aaron Rodgers respond when Jordan Love was drafted in Green Bay?
Oh, he treated him a lot better than he got treated by Brett Favre, that's for sure. And I think Jordan Love has really appreciated that. And Aaron understood what it felt like to be in that position. So he was hell-bent on not doing the same thing to Jordan. And Favre's relationship with Rodgers now is better, much better than it was when they were together as teammates, because they both went through essentially being pushed out of Green Bay and the pain of that and how that felt. They now both understand each other, and their relationship is in a much better place.
Here's the moment that the Jets will never forget. Cut 48.
Protection breaks down and time runs out. Down goes Rodgers and the sack for Leonard Floyd. Now Rodgers sits down. He's coming out of the game.
He tore his Achilles, done, three plays in. And the Jets thought they were going to the Super Bowl. They fell apart. They end up 7-10. Now he does incredible comeback. You write about it in your book, about how he overcomes the Achilles, gets that thing redone with some cutting-edge technology, with great discipline on his part. But the Jets are out of the playoffs. He doesn't come back. Is he ready?
I think he is, Brian. I think he's going to have a big year. I think he's got one left in him. I see the Jets looking at their schedule, maybe 11-6, perhaps winning the division, making a postseason run. After last year, that was such a miserable experience for the fans. I was in the building when it happened. I've never been more heartsick for an athlete and a fan base than I was that night. I think the football gods owe that fan base, fatalistic as it is, and Aaron Rodgers won this year. So I think they're going to have a pretty big year. They're due for it. They haven't been in the playoffs since 2010. So let's see how it plays out.
Lastly, Willie, you bring his family to his Jets debut. They watch that injury. They're not speaking. Do you see a break in that relationship? And how important was it to speak to Rodgers when he gave in and allowed you to speak to him for this book?
Oh, it's very important. He made it a better book. He gave me 2 hours of fact-checking that was essential. I really appreciate that. He hugged his father last summer at Lake Tahoe at the Celebrity Golf Tournament. First time he'd seen his dad or talked to him in 9 years, and they said they loved each other. It was 30 seconds, and that was it, but it was emotional, and both told me they want a relationship with each other. If that happens, I think the rest of the family will come together and fall into place.
And they said in your book, you write, mom and dad said no preconditions, just pick up like it never happened.
Yeah, and you can't litigate those issues that separated them over these 10 years, because then the reconciliation will never happen. So I think everyone – and on that side of the family wants it to happen without conditions. It's now up to Aaron and his father to come together to start that process.
I'm going to talk to you on One Nation this weekend, Saturday at 9, but just real quick, what did you think going in, and what do you now know about Aaron Rodgers? How do you feel about him differently, if at all, from when you started this project?
I didn't realize, Brian, that his teammates almost universally really love him and have over the 20-year career. And one prominent NFL official told me that he can't stand personally Aaron Rodgers, but he said, I have to admit, I've never met an NFL player who does not like him. And I think that part of his discussion or part of his career has been lost in the discussion about Aaron Rodgers in the public arena.
And no one does biographies like you do. It is really great. And and the fact that he read it and says, I'm going to talk to Ian O'Connor or talk to people that knew that you have dealt with, and you got his respect that way, says a lot. The name of the book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Ian O'Connor, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. My pleasure, Brian.
All right, see you Saturday night. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
And don't forget to watch and remember to watch 9 o'clock Saturday night, One Nation. So let's get started. Five people, including two doctors, charged in the investigation of Matthew Perry, as feds say. Perry's personal assistant injected him with a fatal dose of ketamine, which led to the death after buying a batch of an illicit drug from a master chef. Guy's a train wreck, just like Michael Jackson was a train wreck. But these people just take advantage of sycophants out in Hollywood. What else is new? Next, Jordan Chiles is finally opening up about losing her Olympic bronze. And since it's clear, she's furious over the ruling, saying straight up, I have no words. She did win. We can go back and forth on the controversy. He says, I will approach this challenge as I have others and will make every effort to ensure that justice is done. I believe that on the end of the journey, the people in control will do the right thing and give her the bronze. Some people are saying give Bolt the bronze. Other people are upset by that. ESPN has fired Robert Griffin III and Sam Ponder, two fantastic sportscasters. Ponder has been outspoken on social media speaking against transgender athletes. I wonder if that has something to do with it. RG3 had been demoted from his analyst role on Monday Night Football. I'm really not sure why. I know that he tends to be conservative. I don't know if that plays a role. Also, I wanted to get this in. This is on the Brett Favre interview that we just did. Let's play that cut, Pete, that you were just talking about Aaron Rodgers reading out the scouting report on him on the Dan Patrick Show.
Gets sacked a lot, doesn't have ability to change the release of the football. Mechanically, very rigid. He's a little too short. Jeff Tedford, coach quarterback, never pan out. Too well-schooled, very robotic, don't become good pro players. Rodgers is the same mold. System quarterback, can't create on his own. Panics under pressure, gets flustered easily.
What bothers you the most from that profile?
The funnier things are too well-schooled, like you can be too prepared. Very robotic.
He ends up being just the opposite type of quarterback. Tedford's his college coach, and I guess they had a few of these guys go pro, and they didn't really pan out. And by the way, he's just the opposite. This goes to show you, when they go into these things, they have millions of dollars at stake. It's like buying the most expensive 20 yachts you can have, and there's no giving them back if you make a mistake. And amazing how many mistakes they make, especially with first-round draft picks. Remember, Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick, but they didn't mock him. They mocked this guy. And then they put him in the worst possible position possible, backing up Brett Favre.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.